Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
John Schneider's first draft without Pete Carroll by his side, but instead, first-year head coach Mike McDonald is in the books. The Seahawks complete their 10-person draft class by drafting 8 over the last 3 days. I'll explain that. I'll break down my thoughts, give you some scouting notes on the players added today, and give you my 5 overall takeaways, what I think it all means, coming up next on Seahawks Forever.
Welcome to the Seahawks Forever podcast. In-depth analysis on everything Seahawks. And now, here's your host, Dan Vians.
As I record this, the draft is still going on. They're on pick 223 right now, the Las Vegas Raiders. So there could be a chance. You know, there were a couple of drafts in a row there, the John Ursua draft, and then I think the Stephen Sullivan draft, where the Seahawks traded a future pick to get back into the 7th round to grab a guy that they liked, that they thought they might have a hard time getting an undrafted free agency. But I think they're done. When John Boyle tweets out the final draft list from Seahawks headquarters, probably means they've wrapped things up. Haven't seen them start their post-draft press conference yet. Of course, I'll be listening to that and pass along any tidbits and thoughts that I may have on that over the next couple of days, because we'll be recapping all of this in so many different ways with a bunch of different guests giving their opinions over the next couple of weeks. Before we get to this draft class, hit that like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell so you always get future notifications. If you want to support me and or the show, you can buy me a coffee or hit that super thanks button down below. Or if you want to hear ad-free audio episodes, if you prefer your podcasts that way, you can do that on Spotify for a low monthly fee. I'll put all of those details in the description as always. All right, let's put this draft list up on the screen. And you'll see immediately this is the way I have it formatted. And I think this is something that gets lost when the national draft analysts start to grade drafts. You'll see those come out tonight now. There's such an appetite for grades out there among the masses. And I feel like sometimes context gets lost with what draft resources are used for. And as painful as it was for us to sit through the second round last night and watch all those picks go by and all those players we would have liked to have had, as John Schneider said in their post-draft presser last night, we just tried to think about Leonard Williams the whole round, because that is a thing. He's 30 years old now, but 29 when they acquired him, still in his prime, still at the top of his game, signed for 3 more years now, so you do get legitimate return for that second round pick. He is their best defensive tackle and one of the best in the league, and you would not have gotten another defensive lineman in the second round that would have been better. And then in the fourth round, and I base this on the trade charts, the move back from the third and the fifth to the fourth and the sixth, and in the pick swap that they used to get Sam Howell from the Commanders, equated on the Rich Hill trade chart to about a mid fourth round pick. And so that's where I slotted him in here. So really, that's why I say this is a 10-person draft class. Now, when you look at just today, we're going to look at the fourth through the sixth rounds, right? They started the day with the second pick in the fourth round, and that was kind of exciting because we thought we'd get right into it. Well, then they traded down significantly with, once again, the Denver Broncos, another draft day trade with them, and got really nice return for it. They trade 4-2 and their seventh in order to move up into the sixth for a third sixth rounder, and they also netted a fifth where they did not previously have a pick in the fifth round. And so you see what they did there. They go Tyrese Knight, the linebacker out of UTEP. We'll talk about these guys individually in a moment. AJ Barner, the tight end out of Michigan. Then in the fifth round with that pick that they got in the trade, Nehemiah Pritchett, cornerback, Auburn. And then let me get this name right. I've got Brady Henderson was nice enough to send out the phonetics. Here we go. Where do I have it? Sautau Laumea. Played guard and tackle at Utah. He says, even though the Seahawks announced him as a tackle, that he thinks they plan to use him at guard. DJ James, another cornerback from Auburn. Super interesting there that they double dip on Auburn corners. And then small school prospect Michael Jarrell out of Findlay, small school in Ohio, I believe. That's the list. I'll put it up again in a little bit, but I just kind of want to go through these. So, you know, we talked about the trade to move down, and sometimes that's painful, especially when you spend the night sleeping with the lists of available players and doing updated mock draft simulators and seeing all those lists of best available. And then you move down 16 spots and you got to watch some guys go by. In my opinion, the only names that I thought I really liked and had mocked regularly to the Seahawks and that I would have liked to have seen them take in that range, the one that hurt the most might have been Cedric Gray, the inside linebacker out of North Carolina. Had the great Super Bowl week, really productive weak side linebacker. And then Theo Johnson, the uber athletic, big, tall, tight end, oozing with upside out of Penn State. Those guys went, but not a lot of others. And when the Seahawks chose Knight, there were still a lot of linebackers on the board still available that were popular names. Jeremiah Trotter Jr., Olafosio from UW, J.D. Bertrand, Tommy Eichenberg. There were others. And the Seahawks passed on all those guys to take Tyrese Knight. Now, this is probably, of all the picks today, the most polarizing. Friend of the show, Griffin Sturgeon, co-host of the Seattle Overload podcast, just hates the pick. Doesn't like Knight as a linebacker prospect. Had him listed at the very bottom of his list of guys that he watched and how they might fit in Seattle. To me, this is an upside play. This is banking on a guy's athletic ability because there's no question his ability to run around and cover ground. Really productive player, tons of tackles in his career, but raw as heck. And so there's some thought that some of these other linebackers that I named might have been more ready to come in and contribute as rookies. And might project better long-term, at least in the eyes of some. Here's what I'll say about that. What is Mike McDonald known for? Right? He's coached linebackers most of his career. He has said himself that's his favorite position. And it was what he did at the linebacker spot in Baltimore that really turned around their fortunes defensively. And you could say in the 1 year that he went to Michigan, he kind of set the stage there as well by installing Junior Colson as a true freshman at 18 years old and Mike Barrett. His specialty, if you will, is linebackers. And so he certainly had input into this selection. And if he felt like this was a guy he could work with, remember Patrick Queen was considered by some, a lot of Ravens fans, to be a bust until last year. And Mike McDonald got the most out of him. Certainly it helped when you bring a guy like Roquan Smith in. But also remember this. We've talked about this a lot in the offseason, that including recently, talked about with Bryce and Ryan on their Hawks Zone podcast the other day and on the show that we did here on my channel, that they go out and sign Terrell Dodson and Jerome Baker. Baker's 27, but that's still not old for a linebacker. Dodson's 25, both to one-year contracts. You know, the feeling there is it's basically a 1 year audition for these two guys. And that the chances are that one of them is going to establish himself and earn an extension and be a long-term piece moving forward, potentially both of them. And so, you know, Knight has an opportunity to develop, doesn't have to be thrust into a big role right away. But they can find a niche role for him. He has done some work coming off the edge as well. I saw some speculation today that could be something he does early in his career. He can get after the quarterback. He does like to hit. And these guys can coach him up and bank on that upside. I would have liked for them to have double dipped at linebacker. I was really hoping that they would take Nathaniel Watson in the sixth round, a guy who's a little more athletically limited than Knight, but bigger, stronger, more experienced in a bigger conference, SEC Defensive Player of the Year, a guy they met with on a 30 visit, and a guy who's a true Mike linebacker. I thought it would have been a nice pairing moving forward with Knight. I don't know. I don't think Watson has been drafted yet. I'll check that. Before I stop recording, I'll kind of do an update on the draft and kind of see if there are some guys available going into undrafted free agency that might be intriguing. And certainly if Watson doesn't get drafted, that would be one of them. But in this, it's funny to me how quick people are to just reject the notion of a certain draft pick. I had guys come at me today. It's a terrible pick. It's a waste of a pick. It's, you know, we needed more help than that at the thinnest position on the roster, one person said. My opinion is this. There's dozens of people in that building every day whose career it is to do this for the Seahawks and whose jobs depend on it. They're not just throwing darts at a dartboard. They've done their homework, and clearly they feel like Tyrese Knight is a guy that they can get some production out of. Especially when you look at some of the other names that were on the board. So I'm going to defer to the coaches and scouts and front office executives who've been doing this for their whole life on a professional level full time. I'm going to defer to them instead of some Twitter scouts, of which I dabble in that as well. And when I believe in a guy and I have conviction of a guy that I've studied intensely, I'll press my opinion on that. But for the most part, I defer. And the Seahawks clearly moved down, probably made that trade knowing that they were going to be able to get a shot at Knight 16 picks later because that was a little early for him. And they don't really care. I'll touch on that in my five takeaways. Then with their second fourth round pick, just a really, really solid selection, maybe my favorite selection of the day, AJ Barner, tight end, Michigan. This is a guy that I've mocked to Seattle a ton of times, especially in this range. He was always kind of there, fourth, fifth round. A guy that reminds me, a little bit of Will Dissly, although I think he's a little more athletic, he's longer. And then I threw out the John Carlson comp. And Bryce from Hawk Zone came back and said, hey, good comp on that. As a guy who's outstanding blocker, one of the better blockers in this class, and also has really sure hands, looks good running routes, has some untapped upside in the passing game. He was at Michigan last year, right? They didn't throw the ball a ton. We know this because we've heard the J.J. McCarthy narrative for the last couple of months. Before that, he was at Indiana. What, Tommy DeVito? No, that was Illinois. Who was playing at Indiana after Michael Penix left there, right? Not the most explosive passing offense in the country. Just a really reliable guy. And I think when you look at some of the other tight ends on the board, although Cade Stover was still on the board. And so again, Seahawks had conviction about this guy and a reason that they liked him more than Cade Stover, who I thought was really underdrafted and one of the steals of this draft. Now, remember Barner obviously being at Michigan. So Jay Harbaugh worked with him, and apparently he's a very, very good special teams player. So that can be his role. He can be the third tight end, which there will be snaps for that, but he can also be a mainstay on special teams. Then the Seahawks get into the fifth, and due to that trade, they had the first pick in the fifth. And this is where it got really interesting. Heading into this draft, I didn't study the corners. I didn't. I thought they would take one at some point just because it's always a need. You want to keep restocking that cupboard. Some of the guys they have, Mike Jackson's on a one-year deal, and so is Artie Burns. But also those guys can be special teams mainstays also. And they take a couple guys that appear to be great value and oddly enough are teammates. And we'll get to both of them in a minute. But Nehemiah Pritchett, first pick in the fifth round, 6 foot, 190 pounds. ran a 4.36 40 at the combine. I think that was the third fastest corner time, and told coaches that he's actually been timed at 4.28 before. Really, you're going to sense a theme here. Extremely experienced player. 51 career games, 40 career starts. He had 29 career passes defensed. Dane Brugler in his Beast draft guide had him as his 16th best corner in a really good cornerback class and had him as a fourth rounder. Seahawks get him in the fifth. Here's one of his little snippet from his summary. Overall, Pritchett needs to improve his tackling and downfield judgment skills, but his length, speed, and football character are traits NFL teams want to bring into the building. He projects as a rotational cornerback for an NFL secondary. So, Reek Woolen going into the third year of his rookie contract. Trey Brown going into the fourth year, I think. Is he going into the last year of his rookie deal? Sorry for not having that in front of me. And we don't know what they're going to do with Devin Witherspoon. We don't know how they view Reek Woolen. So remember the Seahawks. Well, I'll get into this a little deeper in my five takeaways. Nehemiah Pritchett, the fifth round pick. Then we wait until the sixth. And then the Seahawks go back to the trenches again. Not once, but twice. And they start with Laumea out of Utah. And this is one that Michael Thompson, 12th Man Rising, he'll come on the show in a few days here and do a full draft recap. He really liked this guy. Now, he's only played on the right side, but he's played guard and tackle. And the interesting thing about him at Utah, 44 straight starts. Again, another experienced guy, played a ton of football. 26 at right tackle, 18 at right guard, and he made all Pac-12 at each position. Now, the Seahawks announced him as a tackle, and usually that's telling, right? Guys that play two positions, it usually means something. Like Sione Vaki, the safety that we've talked about quite a bit on this show over the last couple of months out of Utah, another Utah player. Can't remember who drafted him today now, but he was actually announced as a running back. He'd done some Wildcat stuff with Utah. Daniel Jeremiah said he actually liked him better as a running back than a box safety. And so the team announced him as that. Well, they announced Laumea as a tackle, but then in his conference call with reporters after the selection, he said he thinks they're going to play him at guard. And that he was excited about that, that would be his preference. Big, physical, moves well for his size, long, seems like tremendous value in the sixth round. And indeed, Dane Brugler had him as his ninth best guard, ahead of guys like Zach Zinter, Layden Robinson, Matt Gonsalves, who the Seahawks had in for a 30 visit, had a fourth round grade on him, and the Seahawks get him in the sixth. So again, doubling down. And Schneider said last night after the third round, he said, we still have some plans in place for tomorrow on the offensive line. And indeed, he did live up to that. And then the Seahawks go back to Auburn, take another corner, DJ James, although he's a transfer, played 3 years at Oregon, I believe. Similar size, 5'11", 175, a little bit smaller, 4'4", 2 in the 40. Brugler actually had him rated higher than Pritchett. So he had Pritchett as his 16th best corner and a fourth rounder. He had James as his 12th best corner and a third round grade. Seahawks get him in the sixth. Again, stop me if you've heard this before. Very, very experienced. 56 games, 33 career starts, 5 career picks. Brugler says if he can handle big slots and improve his consistency as a tackler, he will compete for a starting nickel role in the NFL. That's interesting. I'll come back to that in a little bit. Now, with their final pick of the day, there were still some players I really liked on the board. Braden McGregor, edge out of Michigan, a position they didn't address in this draft. Liked him. Michael Pratt, the quarterback out of Tulane, was still on the board. We'll talk about quarterbacks in a minute. A couple other things they could have done. Christian Boyd, nose tackle that they met with. There were some other, they hadn't taken a receiver yet. Brendan Rice was still available out of USC. That was really surprising. They could have taken a running back, knowing that in undrafted free agency, they might have a hard time getting a guy to commit because that running back room is kind of stacked. Instead, they go with a small school offensive tackle out of Finley, Mike Jarrell. He was first team all GMAC. Again, super experienced. Small school, but started 40 games all at right tackle. 6'4", 309. Now, he's an older prospect. A lot of the guys in this draft were. He's 25. He'll be 25 during the season. Corbin Smith tweeted out that it was interesting. He when he was coaching high school football, he coached against this guy. And interestingly enough, at the time, he was a tight end. Now, this is something Lance Zierlein says Finley is a major project, which is concerning because he's going to be 25 years old. So I don't love that combination of a guy that's seen as a project, but he's already an older player. Dane Brugler says overall he'll encounter a steep learning curve against NFL power, but he's an agile big man with light feet in his sets and the length and toughness NFL teams target in a developmental tackle. So that's interesting. And that would sound really encouraging to me in the sixth round if a guy was 22. But this is interesting. This is from Emery Hunt and his draft guide. And he studies these small school guys as much as anyone does. He has an interesting note where he says he can still work to develop his body more and increase mass. He's 6'4", 309, but lean. He's a lean 309 pounds and can probably get up to 315, 320 without losing athleticism. That's intriguing to me. So a fun project for Scott Huff to be handed in his first year as offensive line coach in Seattle. So let me put the list up again, just to recap, right? Byron Murphy in the first round, then Leonard Williams with the second round pick, Christian Haynes, guard UConn, third round, and then today's haul that we just detailed. So a couple of things stood out to me because of this. And so I thought I would present it as my five takeaways in no particular order. First of all, obviously, they talked about it leading up to the draft and they meant what they said. They were serious and are serious about addressing the trenches. To pass up four trade offers to move down from 16, trades that John Schneider described as good trades, to stick and pick Murphy, a guy they clearly wanted. Schneider admitted to some rope-a-dope during the process, not trying to be seen, connecting to Murphy, wanting to hide their interest in him. To have that kind of conviction to stick and pick for a guy, best defensive tackle in this class, a guy oozing with upside, who can be a major, major piece of this defensive line moving forward and add to what has now become a strength of this roster, I think. We'll do a roster reset show here in a couple of days. And I think, you know, you compare where we were last year on the defensive line to now, where last year they had just drafted Cameron Young in the fourth, Mike Morris in the fifth, and it was Jaron Reed and Draymond Jones. They hadn't signed Mario Edwards yet. It was looking really kind of sparse and scary. But now you look at, you know, Reed being back, Leonard Williams, Draymond Jones, Cam Young, Mike Morris, and now you add Byron Murphy to that. That's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. They still have Miles Adams and Matt Gotell. There's some other depth guys there as well. They're serious about it. And then on the offensive line, Schneider's been telling us for months, really, we're going to address it. He said they were going to address it in a big way in the draft. And they do in the third round, getting Christian Haynes. And I think there were some other guys there that if Haynes had been taken earlier, that they would have still gone with that position there. It feels that way. But Haynes to me was a steal at that point in the third round. I had him as a second rounder all day long. Thought he was the second or third best guard in this entire draft. And then they add Laumea. And then Pharrell later. And then you can even add A.J. Barner to that list because he's a guy that's not afraid to get physical and can really help you in the blocking game. Remember, they only signed Pharrell Brown to a one-year deal, known as a guy who's the blocker first but can also contribute in the passing game. So I think that's another, just his physicality, the way he plays the game from the tight end position, I think is another sign that they're really serious about the trenches. Takeaway number two, they really do like Sam Howell. I know I'm hearing it already that, like, you know, dang it. Schneider keeps talking about how he's disappointed he hasn't taken a quarterback. Ron Wolf taught him to take one every year. And, you know, there were the reports by James Palmer that they tried to trade up into the top 10 for Michael Penix on day one. That report has been refuted. Brady Henderson. Was it Brady Henderson? No, it was, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the name. Somebody from ESPN 710, Curtis Crabtree, I believe, said his, according to his sources, that report was wrong. There's some speculation that maybe Atlanta was doing some damage control, trying to leak that out. But they had opportunities. Spencer Rattler fell to the middle of the fourth round, went to the New Orleans Saints. They could have drafted him multiple times with the picks they had. Michael Pratt, as I speak now, I believe is still available on the board. In fact, some other guys have gone ahead of him. Devin Leary went to Baltimore ahead of Michael Pratt. It'd be an interesting situation if he fell all the way out into undrafted free agency. And again, before I wrap this up, I'll check and see where we sit so I can comment on that. But they clearly liked Sam Howell better than the opportunity cost it would have taken to take a quarterback here in lieu of another position. And they should. I mean, if you had put Sam Howell in this quarterback class, I said this last night, I think clearly he would have been at worst QB7 in this class. I would have put him at QB6. I would have put him slightly ahead of Bo Nix. He's younger. He's got a better arm. He's got 16 games starting experience in the NFL, 17 games. Seahawks liked him coming out 2 years ago, and they were able to get him for mid-fourth round value in this draft. That's why I put him on that list. They did acquire a quarterback this offseason. Yeah, he's only signed for 2 more years, but they'll know 2 years from now what they want to do with that position, where they want to go with it. In fact, they'll know a year from now how they feel about Howell and Geno, having Howell in the program for a full year, and whether or not they want to attack next year's class at all or make a move for a guy that's available via trade or free agency, whatever. Or maybe Geno just, you know, slams the door on all that and he's a perfect fit with Ryan Grubb, takes another step and establishes his guy, himself as a guy that's going to be there for another 2 or 3 years. But they could have had Spencer Rattler, brought him in for a 30 visit. Schneider called him impressive, an impressive individual. They clearly didn't like any of those guys enough to add him to the roster and commit a third roster spot to that position. They'll obviously sign someone in undrafted free agency. They met with John Rhys Plumlee. They'll do what they did last year with Holton Ahlers, and they'll bring a guy to camp. And if he's good enough and they think there's some promise, they'll have him on the practice squad. They usually have a quarterback in the practice squad, but late last year they didn't. Third takeaway. They obviously were hunting for upside and athleticism on day three. And this is something that got them in trouble over a 4 or 5 year span of drafts where they didn't really focus it. You know, John admits now they went for need too much, but they were a little too enamored with traits and upside, an athletic upside. And they would take guys that had a great athletic profile and try to change their position, right? It felt that way today. There were guys at just about each pick that might have been that might have had a higher floor than some of the guys they took, or that made more sense with how they might fit on the roster. There's a lot of consternation out there about not adding a safety. We'll touch on that in a minute. But you talk about speed, athleticism, Knight, Pritchett, James, those two corners, and Knight. Really athletic guys that can go sideline to sideline and have speed to burn. So that was a priority. Takeaway four. They might be up to something in the secondary. Something might be up there. I thought they would take a corner at some point during the draft, but two? And two guys that were, according to Dane Brugler, steals, you know, value, guys that should have gone earlier. Guys that were rated higher than that, especially considering that they brought the entire cornerback room back intact from last year. Now, Artie Burns signed to a 1-year veteran minimum deal, no guaranteed money. Going to be tough for him to make the roster. Probably don't see that happening, actually. But remember when the Seahawks had those great defenses, right? 13, 14, 15. There was 1 year in particular, I think it might have been 2012 leading into the Super Bowl year, or maybe it was 13, where I'd have to go back and look at the names now, but they were so stacked at corner that multiple guys that they cut in training camp ended up sticking on other rosters and playing significant roles. They were loaded to the point that, you know, when Richard Sherman broke through as a rookie, it was only because two other guys ahead of him got hurt. I think Walter Thurman got hurt. Was Trufant still on that roster? I'm just going by memory here. He was the third string guy. So adding Pritchett and James to that group, you know, Brown near the end of his rookie deal, Woolen in year three, it makes you wonder what plans they have for Witherspoon. Right? Brugler says James projects to be a nickel and a pretty good one. Maybe that indicates that Mike McDonald would love to have Devin Witherspoon be an outside guy. Maybe your lockdown guy, your number one corner that travels with receivers. We've heard some talk that they're going to potentially do that more than Pete Carroll ever did. He usually just stuck his guys right side, left side. Maybe that's in the plans. Or maybe they see Pritchett and James as outside guys. It'll be interesting to hear the post-game presser or the post-draft presser today of how they view those guys. And they might not be totally forthcoming. But also the fact that they didn't draft a safety makes you wonder what they have up there. First of all, I don't think there's any question now that Kobe Bryant is a safety full-time now. They made the conversion last year in training camp. He really flashed, showed a willingness to come up and hit, and that some of the things that made it hard for him to succeed as a boundary corner in the NFL, just that lack of explosive short area quickness, not as big a deal at safety, that might really be a nice move for him. And then he had the toe injury. It kind of held him back last year. But they probably feel better about that group. Jarek Reed coming back off an ACL, but really flashed before that. And remember Jonathan Sutherland out of Penn State, undrafted free agent last year, was getting starter reps late in training camp. And then he got hurt. They had to release him with an injury settlement, brought him back, and he spent the whole year on the practice squad. But he's a guy that was getting a lot of buzz. Veterans were talking about him, and he was getting run with the ones. And even Ty Okada got some late season elevations last year. They may feel better about their safety group than you do. They may also see Julian Love as a long-term piece that'll be extended beyond this year, and maybe even extended this year, because they need to clear some cap space, and that'd be one way to do it. He's in the last year of his two-year deal. So we're going to see, there's going to be some interesting moving pieces in that secondary. And I think that'll be one of the storylines heading into camp, is how they're going to use those guys. And then my fifth takeaway is John Schneider and the Seattle Seahawks still don't care what anyone thinks about who they draft, how they grade, and how they make their selections. Because Tyrese Knight is a pick that, you know, John Schneider says he's not on social media, but he told me that his son Jack is the one that monitors all that and is always telling him what's going on. And kind of like the movie Draft Day, where Sonny Weaver tells Vontae Mack to just don't tweet, just don't be on there. John kind of says that to Jack, like, don't, you shouldn't be on there. He certainly is in touch enough, you know, has his finger on the pulse of the fan base, that he probably had to know when he took Tyrese Knight today that it was going to be viewed as a reach by some. And he does not care. He doesn't care what you think about them taking a developmental tackle in the sixth round. He doesn't care what you think about them taking two corners in the sixth round from the same school when they already have what appears to be a good corner group on the roster. He does not care. Now, before I tell you what I'm going to grade this draft, I'll just put it into context by saying that that mindset used to work. We used to see evidence of that all through the draft, including the first round. Bruce Irvin comes to mind. Like, that was considered a reach by just about everybody. They didn't care. That was the guy they wanted. They didn't want to risk losing him by moving down or taking another player. They had conviction and they took him. At least in the last 3 or 4 years, the change in philosophy of not reaching as much for need, and John talking openly and being transparent about lessons learned in previous drafts, we've seen that early in drafts. And I think I tweeted or said on the show last night that no matter what they did today, this draft for me was going to get a really good grade because of the picks of Murphy, Haynes, and the acquisitions of Williams and Howell with draft capital. And then they went out and kind of tested. they went out today and put that theory to a test, right? Because there's some projects. There is some projection in looking at this draft class. But I'm going to give it, I thought I was going to give it a B, but I don't want recency bias to color it too much. I'm giving it a B plus because I think Murphy's that good and I commend them for sticking and taking the dude that they should have stuck and took. And Haynes is that good. And I think they got a long-term starter and a solution at a position that's been a struggle for a while. And a guy that hopefully, you know, I think the Seahawks have a track record under John Schneider and formerly Pete Carroll of, I don't think they've ever signed a rookie draft pick offensive lineman to a second contract. Do I have that right? I don't think they have. I don't think they've ever given anyone a fifth-year option. They didn't with Ifedi or Carpenter. And so maybe this will be the guy. I like him that much. And Laumea didn't study him, but the things I hear and what people are telling me already and the feedback I'm getting is, especially from Michael Thompson, like he loves the dude. He thinks it's a steal in the sixth round. So maybe, you know, long-term, there are some fans that are going to look back on this draft a few years ago, and if Knight doesn't become a starting linebacker, they'll rip the draft. But at least we have another guy at that position group on a rookie contract moving forward. And there's things we don't know as well. The Seahawks may have their eyes on some undrafted free agents. We'll see what that group looks like here in a minute. And they may like Patrick O'Connell more than we think they do. Did you see his testing numbers when the Seahawks tweeted that out last week of the GPS measurements that they do in practice and the fastest guys and where O'Connell ranked on that list? They really liked Drake Thomas when they picked him up from the Raiders late in the process last year, kind of stole him, poached him off their practice squad. They may like those guys better than you think. And they may like the two guys that they signed a lot. I think they do. So, I mean, that's where I'm at with this. And before I go, let me, as I promised. So there's still like, it's amazing how long this seventh round takes with all the comp picks and everything that are added to it. There are still, let me see here. I'm doing this live. There's still 12, 13 picks. Michael Barrett, unfortunately, just went. Wished he had slipped through. Let me look at a couple position groups here just before I go. First, let's take a look at linebacker for those of you that are concerned. Some of the guys that still are undrafted. Curtis Jacobs, Penn State. Griffin Sturgeon, I think, really likes him as a Seahawks fit. Jackson Sermon out of Cal, tackling machine. Nathaniel Watson has been drafted. Easton Gibbs is a guy out of Wyoming that Michael Thompson absolutely loves. Omar Speets from LSU. There's some dudes here. Steel Chambers out of Ohio State. He's kind of an undersized guy, more of a coverage linebacker, but there's probably a need on the roster for that. They also might like, remember they brought John Rattigan back on another one-year deal for $3 million, and none of it's guaranteed, but they might like him. They love him on special teams. There's some speculation he could be the new special teams captain, but that he might also find a role as a linebacker. And then I want to look at this. Yeah, quarterback's interesting to me. So with 12 picks left in the draft, and let's see who else might be in the market for a quarterback. You got Cleveland, Dallas, Green Bay, Tampa, Houston, KC, Baltimore already took a quarterback, San Francisco. I don't think Michael Pratt's getting drafted, you guys. I don't think he is. And that would be, it'd be interesting to know if the Seahawks are on the phone with him right now. Like, he's a guy people expected to go in the fourth round. And some people feel has starter upside. And Daniel Jeremiah spent a lot of time today talking about how he can't believe that he hasn't been taken yet. John Rhys Plumlee is still available as well. Sam Hartman, Carter Bradley, Gus Bradley's son out of South Alabama. Keaton Slovis, if you're looking at, you know, Austin Reed out of Western Kentucky, went to the combine. There's some interesting guys, but to me, Michael Pratt, if Michael Pratt goes undrafted and the Seahawks are able to sign him, that would be a coup, considering, you know, I think a lot of us were tweeting and wondering if they'd take him or Rattler in the fourth or fifth round. That could be a real opportunity. So certainly keep our eyes on that. That's my wrap up. I give it a B+ for the reasons that I said. I think the top players and the acquisitions made are good enough that even if all you get out of day three are a couple of role players, some depth pieces, you know it's going to be more than that. I think two or three of those guys are going to become starters. I think Laumea has an outstanding chance. He might even push as a rookie. Now, the real question is going to be who do they flip over to the left side? Because Christian Haynes has only played right guard in his career. And Laumea has only played right guard and right tackle. So which one of those guys? I suspect it might be Haynes. He did work at center quite a bit during Senior Bowl week, and there has been some work for him there. So maybe he's a little more comfortable moving around. You slide him over to the left side. He's your starter. Well, he'd have to beat out Laken Tomlinson. This gets really interesting. They've added layers. They've added options. Let me know in the comments how you feel about the offensive line today and the effort they put into it. And remember, I've been saying it for a long time. Oluwatimi's a starter. He deserves to be. I think he's going to be a long-term solid starter there, especially paired with a couple of really interesting guards on the sides. One other takeaway I could have included, but I'm not sure I have the conviction that I don't feel 100% sure about it yet. But I feel a little bit better about the prognosis for Abe Lucas at right tackle and his knee. The fact that they brought George Fant in on a two-year deal to kind of hedge, but that they didn't draft a guy at a significant spot tells me something. And I like that. Follow me on Twitter at Seahawks Forever. I'll be back with a full roster reset, and we'll just continue to break down these prospects, and then we'll look ahead to the offseason. Forever and always, go Hawks. Thanks for watching.